tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Hide my tail or turn.
Good afternoon, good evening if you're listening to this live. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening if you're listening to this recorded on podcast. Again, we'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother. Again, we have Dr. Nick Chapman, Dr. Keelan Hinton, and we are here for all of your mental health, love, relationship, attachment, and community needs, and everything else in between. For those that would like to participate in the show, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, you can contact us at B2B Psych. That's B, the number 2B. P-S-Y-C-H, B2B Psych at gmail.com. As we always say, we'd like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL for providing us this platform to talk about mental health issues, attachment issues, relationship issues, and everything else in between, and community issues. But as we always say, any of the comments, perspectives, suggestions, or ideas that you hear on this program are not represented or supported by Marshall University or by WMUL, any of their sponsors, supporters, or affiliates. These are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, take this advice at your own risk. And while this some of this may be therapeutic, as we always say, this is not what, sir?
We are not serving the role as therapists here. And I guess another thing to say about that is, even though we both have training as psychologists, it'll be a blend of things that are going to be based on research, and other things are going to be based on our opinions. It's just two men having conversations and then letting you into our man cave. So don't say we didn't tell you. Don't say you weren't warned.
Exactly, exactly. So we are happy to be back again. We thank all of those who continue to listen, who continue to support the show, as always. And we're getting a lot of buzz. We're getting a lot of comments and suggestions and compliments and critiques on our shows. So that's what we like. That's what we like, definitely. And again, our goal is just to get people talking, just to hear a different perspective, and hopefully people can go out and have their own, they can go out and have their own conversations. So as we move on and we move forward, again, as we always say, we have taken this show coast to coast. I am in the great state of Heaven, West Virginia, while Dr. Chapman, the traitor, is has moved on to terrible, terrible Southern California. So how's the sun treating you, sir?
It's treating me well. You know, it's just finally starting to feel a little bit like 70 degrees. And I have to say, you know, I know some people maybe be a little bitter because I'm in California and if you're wherever else you are. But when it comes to West Virginia, West Virginia does hold a special place in my heart, you know, and I feel really still connected. And I still am involved in a lot of things in West Virginia. I just do it from afar, you know. I contribute from afar.
I understand. And I will speak on the behalf of all West Virginians. We do not appreciate that some people comment. Feels a little bit personal there. So again, let's rock and roll. Before we start, anything Anything happened lately? Anything in the news? Anything caught your eye before we rock and roll? Because again, today we're going to start part two of our conversation about masculinity. But before we do that, we always like to start the first five or 10 minutes or whatever. Anything new? Anything in the news? Anything been going on lately? You got anything?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that caught my mind was that, you know, the thing I sent you a message about. Yeah, it wasn't even necessarily meant for, like, that we have to talk about it in the show, but that's what comes to my mind. And so, for the listeners, it was basically a professor at some college. I don't even remember exactly where. I feel like it was maybe in the Northeast area, maybe like New York or somewhere. There was a debate on Zoom about police officers. And the student was basically saying that they felt like police officers were heroes. And the professor had their own opinion about it. When I was listening to it, it just basically seemed like you have to watch it for yourself to get your own opinion. But that the professor had a strong opinion. So it was kind of like she wasn't necessarily agreeing with the idea that police officers were heroes. And she was just kind of refuting his point based on other things that I think have to do with her feelings on what should happen to police reconstruction. And the whole reason it stood out for me is not necessarily that one is right or wrong, is that it was a freedom of speech thing. And thinking about freedom of speech for both parties involved. So you have the student, and then you have the professor, and then you have the challenge of how to hold that space and keep that space safe. And how can you do that with still have the ability to maintain some free speech? So it's more like a thought-provoking thing. I think it would be like, it's like a video to just, if you happen to be in the position of an educator or anybody who has a platform where you might have some power, how you really think about what you talk about, and not only what you talk about, but how you respond to what other people think.
Yeah. I teach quite a few courses that a lot of my courses are discussion based. And for me, I'm always checking. I am constantly trying to check my opinion and check my perspective, because I understand that being in a position of power, we are in a unique, as educators, we're in a unique position because we can reproduce ourselves and our thoughts and our ideas on a daily basis. That is what makes what we do so very important. We are in a position every day to multiply what we think and how we feel exponentially, from course to, from class to class, from day to day. And I always want my student, I want to teach my students to think for themselves. I want to give them tools to think for themselves and develop their own ideas and not just parrot back what I say. So I'm saying all that to say, I'm constantly checking my perspective and making sure, and I try as best as I can to make sure that I am not forcing my opinion or my beliefs on them. And I think that you're right. It's a fine line. How do you moderate a debate and not let your personal feelings get involved? And when I saw it, that's what I saw. I saw, you know, when you're in a position of power, you know, it's, I just think you have to be careful to make sure that you're not pushing your agenda or pushing your perspective. You have to constantly check yourself, particularly in sensitive, when you get to topics that are sensitive to you, like when I talk about race or culture or whatever, and I want to, and I try as best as I can to make sure that I present a balanced perspective. It's just like we did with our last show. We made sure to say, you know, we don't want to abolish the police. The police have a very hard job. We pray for their families. Like, we want to try, but there's also this other perspective. So you want to try to present both perspectives, present a balance, and then let people decide for themselves. And it looked like that kind of conversation kind of got away from her. Yeah,
I think you make some good points. And that's the balance as, okay, so there's free speech by itself, but then there's free speech when you're in the position of an educator and your position is to provide information to people. to, for lack of better words, to vulnerable minds. So the way when I was watching this video, and I want people to, I wish I could remember the school, but I'm sure if you Google it, it didn't happen that long ago, you'd be able to find it. So you can formulate your own opinion. But I was thinking about, like, I was like, what she said wasn't, I didn't think what she said so much was bad. It was just that she really was like on her opinion and reacted to what his opinion was. And I even think in his follow-up of what he said, he's just like basically like, because it turned out to be like, seemed like a liberal versus Republican thing. And but the whole point, I think one of the points he was making was, well, you have to provide space for both sides, which I think is a valid point. And anybody, it's going to be hard when it's something you're real passionate about. You know, these are things where when I'm in those moments, I just like sometimes don't say anything. I'm just like, okay. Like, I don't say anything because I'm like, it's going to be too much. But the art of an educator is to be able to do that. And it means, and I think it's hard as a human to do it. It takes more skill as an educator to do it. But it's also a reason that I think we have as a nation problems. It's because we can't have those conversations that allow divergent views and equal space for them.
Yeah.
I understand there'll be some things that maybe they're leaning one way as opposed to the other. I'm not saying that everything is equal and all, but I'm saying if you can't give people opportunity to fully express, in this example, he's just saying that he thinks police officers are heroes. I don't know why you have to refute that particular point. You know, like even if you disagree with it in the position of an educator, then say something else. You know, like it was that was part of it. She was trying to persuade him because of her feeling, but it's not just him she's persuading, it's everybody else. The responsibility is there, you know, everybody else in the room.
Yeah. And he brought up something that's probably a good conversation for us to have a little bit later, and that is conservatives in higher education, and is it hard? I think that's an interesting conversation and debate to have. Is it hard for professors or students to be conservative in university? I think that's a really interesting conversation for us to have later. But I will say this: I feel like I've done my job when at some point in the conversation they have to ask me, "What do you think?" If they have to ask me, then I know up until that point, I'm presenting both sides, or I'm just presenting information, and I haven't given a tell as to which side I'm on yet, because I'm constantly trying to, and there's constant banter, and I am constantly challenging both perspectives. And at some point when somebody say, well, what's the answer? What do you think? Then at that point, I know I've done what I was supposed to do, and I'll say, and if they ask, I'll say, well, this is this, and some things I don't give my personal perspective on. You know,
that's
you don't.
Good. I hope people will catch that and think about it. You don't have to be an educator to think about these things. Maybe you're a parent just trying to teach your kid how to think. You know, like, that's good. Like, if they don't know, if they have to ask you, you presented information and you've been presenting about it for a while, and they have to ask you, I'm not exactly sure what you think. That's a good sign. I think that that's a good matrix to have. And the other thing, I think when it comes down to, like, students ask me all the time what I think, and sometimes I stay pretty neutral with it, depending on what we're talking about, because sometimes it's theories and there can be more than one view to it.
Yeah.
But when I do, when it is something I think, I try to just state, this is what I think. This is not based on any facts. These are just based on my own thoughts. I think that helps too, because it's like you're not stating that it's fact. You're just saying, this is how it appears to me. These are my thoughts, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So that was interesting. Hopefully, people will go out and find it. I think it was Cypress College.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I don't know where it was, but that's interesting. You know, it's just when their dynamics. I think the issue again is, like you said, it wasn't necessarily what she said, but when you add the element of dynamic, when you have the dynamic of power and control, when you have this imbalance of power, then that shifts and changes everything. So, right. Yeah, that was interesting. That was good stuff. It was good stuff. So hopefully people will go out and watch it. So now, part two of masculinity. We started a conversation week before last, a couple of weeks ago, about masculinity. And what does masculinity mean to men? And we thought it was a pretty good conversation, and we wanted to talk about it a little bit more and maybe build on that and maybe wrap up, remind us of some things that we talked about before, as well as build on that conversation. What does masculinity mean to men? And most importantly, should masculinity, society is in a space, and this is a generation that I think wants to challenge, that wants to challenge ideas, stereotypical ideas of masculinity, and should masculinity be redefined? Is a good question to ask. But ultimately, we want to talk about what does masculinity mean to men? How does it affect our interactions? How does it affect how we interact in the world with our friends and our relationships? How does it play an important part in how we think about ourselves and our space and place in the world? But I think a good starting point may be to just touch on what is it about, and I'll throw this out to Dr. Chapman or both of us, what is it about masculinity that you think this generation wants to redefine, to do away with, to redefine or to expel in some way? Because that's the feeling that I get generally, is that when I speak to younger folks, they think that it's important that we should redefine what it means to be a man, because there are elements of masculinity that are what they call toxic. So what do you think?
And I just want to reiterate for the listeners, toxic masculinity is a phrase that Dr. Hinton doesn't like.
That you should throw me under the bus.
I think he should know it for context. He can explain it, but I just think you should know. All right, question. I don't know. I guess there's probably a lot of variables. I guess my gut reaction would be that maybe it has something to do with masculinity being tied into degrading in some way of women and status of women and equality of women. And it sort of taking the blame for that issue. Like, masculinity is part of that. That's why we have this issue. And in order for us to get rid of that issue, then this is one thing that we can start to snip away at so that we can make things equal.
So are there, I'm thinking about, let's try to define, what does it mean to be a man? Stereotypically, not us, not from our perspective, what does it stereotypically mean to be a man? And are those things, are those traits toxic? When I think of being a man, I think about, stereotypical perspectives. And then we're at the 20 mark, so station identification. Again, this is Marsh University, WMUL, 88.1 FM. And Wednesdays at 9, you are listening to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. And today we're here for all of your mental health, culture, and community needs. And today we're doing a part two of our conversation on masculinity. So now we're trying to talk about what are stereotypical masculine traits and what makes them toxic. The only thing I can think of when I think of being a man from a stereotypical perspective, and this isn't my opinion, I mean from society's perspective, is providing and protecting. At the end of the day, those are the only traits that a man, that quote unquote we think men have, that men have to have, is providing and protecting. Someone made a statement once, I read, it was online, and I thought it was an interesting point. He said that masculinity isn't toxic. He said masculinity isn't toxic. Weak men are toxic. Insecure. He said weak men are toxic. Insecure men are toxic. Men are only toxic when they are self-conscious and insecure and weak, because they take that quote unquote weakness and that insecurity out on their partners and out on the women in their lives. And I thought that was so interesting. And it made me think about, again, providing and protecting, is that toxic or is it only toxic when it becomes dominant? You see what I'm saying? So are there two sides to, are there two ways and two sides to that coin? Two ways to think about being male or being masculine. What we do is provide and protect. If that ability to provide and protect comes from a space of loving and caring and wanting you to grow and wanting to keep you safe, is that toxic? If that goes to another extreme and it becomes possessive and it becomes dominant and it becomes being in control. So it's this, you see what I'm saying? It's the same thing, but it all depends on who, the characteristics and perspective, inner strength of the man with which is trying to provide and protect. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's a lot going through my mind on that one. I think I come back to that first idea you said about the, it's not that there's toxic masculinity, it's that man becomes a toxic when they're insecure or weak in some way. I think that's interesting for a lot of reasons, but one reason would be, you said provide and protect. Well, I think most people would agree that that's a stereotypical view of masculinity. I think under, I guess, both of those categories would be strength. So when I think about, you know, what I would imagine stereotypical for a male is to be strong, which means you can't be weak, which means if there's any sign that you're weak, whether physically or mentally, then you're going to be vulnerable. How can you protect if we go like, you know, prehistoric, if the predator in the wild sees that you're weak, as soon as it sees you as a target, it's going to attack you, you're going to die, then your loved ones die, if we go from that perspective. So even with that statement that toxic masculinity is really just an insecure male, are they really disconnected? Because what society says is a male must always be secure. So then if a male feels vulnerable, he must shield that, which makes him put on a facade of secure, even though he may be insecure, which is natural because nobody's always secure.
I was reading some, and I'll piggyback off what you just said. I was reading some solution focused stuff this weekend, and I ran across this quote by Emile Chartier. It's French. I got that right. Chartier. Emile Chartier. And he said, nothing is more dangerous than the only idea that you have when it's the only idea that you have. And I want you and everybody else to think about that for a second. Nothing is more dangerous than the one idea you have when it's the only idea that you have. And what does it have to do with anything? That is what's wrong with men. Because I think that that's a part of what our issue or problem is there's only one real way to be a man. If you provide and protect and be strong, we don't have a lot of options. Like, think about it. We don't have, like I said, we don't raise babies. We don't have babies. What do? Our job is to provide and protect. That is what we do. And when the one idea you have is the only idea you have, when the one identity and one perspective that you, at the end of the day, I don't care what you do. I don't care who you are. I don't care how much money you have. If you don't provide and protect, people will, society and other people will call into question your masculinity. And maybe that is a problem. I think that's interesting what you talk. You just brought up about, you know, back in the day, you know, we're not hunting and gathering. Maybe that's the issue, and I see why this generation now is starting to, and I think it's dope that they're starting to think about these things, you know what I mean? Like, nobody's hunting and gathering anymore. It maybe at one point it was important for you to provide and protect because you had to catch a deer and you had to fight off a bear with your hands or whatever, you know what I'm saying? I know that's an extreme, but you get what I'm saying, but we don't live that way now. Society has changed. And because society has changed, are those characteristics, you know, obsolete now? Are those characteristics outdated now? And I think it's dope that they're starting to think about that.
Well, here's the other thing, right? Okay, so I know there's different people ideas on this theory, but proposing it from sort of an evolutionary perspective, both psychological and physiological, here would be an example and how crazy it would sound. If, let's just say, you have a creature that used to be a bird, and they were a bird because wings were needed to survive and get food. And then as time grew, food sources were more available and wings were really not needed. And as they developed, the new creatures didn't really have wings, and they saw the males were the ones doing most of the flying. They had more features of the wings because they used to use that. And then they say to them, those wings are like toxic. Like, you really should get rid of those wings. I don't understand. Yeah, okay, I don't know what you, maybe you had to use them in the past hundreds of years ago. You're not using them anymore. So something's wrong with your wings. Psychologically, it could be the same way. Like if we look at the way that we're physiologically geared, and there is some research that suggests males tend to get physiologically frustrated, stressed, anxious quicker than males. So then now we're telling you there's something wrong with you having that because things have changed, then everything else with you should have changed too. When there are theories that suggest certain things exist in people because of some type of psychological evolution. So if you are anxious, it might just be because early on somebody in your family lineage, anxiety helped them survive. But now you're mad at this person who's just, I know this is like, maybe you're like, no, people didn't inherit this, but just for something for you to think about, like if that's happened, now we're calling this thing that's just been there, not necessarily totally because of you, toxic.
Yeah.
Or another example would be if you grew up, it doesn't even have to go back that far. Let's just say you grew up in our society and you learned from whoever took care of you that, hey, look, men do this. They don't cry. They show strength. Whenever something happens, you feel a tear, you lock that tear up. We don't see no tears out here. That's just not what we do. And you probably get that message from males and females. And that's the message you've been hearing all this time. And that's what you've used. Those are tools you use to survive. Yeah, now that you're older, maybe you don't need those tools anymore because now you happen to be with somebody who's more accepting and like doesn't think you need to fit that category and actually is raised in a different way. But those are still the tools you learned how to use. You can call them toxic because you're still using them, or we can recognize whether we're using in the first place and then see if we adapt from there.
Yeah. And again, there's just so much here. Again, I think it's interesting to think about what is it that makes these traits toxic? Is it that you use them, or is it the way with which you use them? So again, one person's protection is another person's domination. And I think that is so, so very important. But I think it's an important conversation to have to see some of these things. Are they outdated and antiquated? Maybe we needed them before, but we don't need them now. And maybe we need them now, and we just don't realize that we need them now. Like, should men continue to try to be protectors in case a war breaks out? Like,
does it have to be a war? It could just be you go into the grocery store and somebody tries to rob you guys. I mean, what do people want their man to do? Just be like, you know, like Kevin Hart, like, hey, you know, hey, yay, just don't hurt us. You know, like
that is a point that I make constantly is people always talk about toxic men, but I think as a society, we all play a part in training and ingraining our boys a certain way. Like, we probably, the men out there can probably attest to this. We've all probably heard big boys don't cry from our mothers and our aunts and our grandmothers and the women in our lives more than we did from the men in our lives. So it's interesting that we talk about, I think it's a society thing. It's not something that's being passed down from male to male. You have men that grow up in single family with single mothers that end up quote unquote toxic. So it's not a, I think that's interesting that is a part of the conversation that we never hear and we never have. And that is, I think that's what bothers me about the toxic masculinity conversation, because we always talk about toxicity, but we never ask why. I don't think I've ever heard anybody ask why. All the conversations, all the debates, all the round tables I've been to, I've never heard anyone ask why. What is happening to these men? Why are they this way? Because a part of, again, it goes back to our philosophy about people. They're good people and bad people in the world. If you're doing something bad, you're a bad person. When it comes to men, men are competent. When, like I said, you can be a woman and live in San Diego and get on a plane and go storm the Capitol, and people will ask why. They will start to think about, they will start to think of reasons why. She was wooed. She was tricked. When you're a man and you do something, there is this perception of competence. We don't view 18-year-old, I don't believe as a society, we view 18-year-old men the same way we view 18-year-old women. An 18-year-old male knows what he's doing. If he robs somebody, if he fights somebody, if he hits somebody. So I think it's a good conversation to have, this idea of the way we think about boys, the way we think about men. But I digress. We, as men, we probably hear it just as much, if not more, from the women in our lives than the men in our lives. And as we said before, women understand what happened to beta males. Women don't want their sons. Women want their sons to be alpha males just as much as they want, just as much as the fathers want their son to be males. We've all, and again, I think it's interesting. I wish we could hear men voices, but men would, for those out there listening, ask the men in your lives. They probably heard big boys don't cry more from the women in their lives than the men. And again, I don't think people are trying to make you toxic. Again, I think these are the people in our lives trying to protect you. Because we understand what happens to quote unquote weak men, whatever a weak man is. And that's why we're having this conversation. I'm not saying that there's weak men. I'm saying from a societal standpoint, practical societal standpoint, a layman's standpoint, there are strong men and there are weak men. I don't want my son to be a quote-unquote weak man, so we have to make him strong. So I'm just saying all that to say, we talk about men being toxic, but we never ask why. And there's this assumption it's coming from men, but it's coming from everybody. We get it from everywhere in society.
Well, I think that's a good point. Some kind of a visual came to me of, so the thing is about strength, and so if anybody knows kind of about working out, and basically for your muscles to get big, you have to tear them. And when you tear them, there's a, you know, fluid that's released that causes pain. If that repair process doesn't go well, then it actually could be toxic to your body. And I think that's a good analogy for how people become quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes, people, toxic. If they have to be too strong, then they rip those muscles, they create this toxic fluid in the muscles that can't be repaired because they don't have the freedom, like women, to be sad or upset or show somebody they're sad or upset. Uh-huh. And that contributes to the problem.
Yeah. I think we've come up, we should put a pin in this, and I think this is important. I hope people are listening. This notion or idea of, does it matter the person's perspective and identity? Can two people do the same thing and one person's strength is another person's toxic? Or is there something wrong with toxic altogether? What I think I have, you know, I have two kids. I have a son and a daughter. And what's interesting is, this is going back to a statement I just made before about expectations. The expectations of men and women. And maybe that's where all of this leads. I didn't raise my son any different than I raised my daughter. Every morning before my son gets up and walks, every morning when my son walks out of the house, I kiss him. Every morning, I hug him, I kiss him, I say, I love you, have a good day, text me when you get there. Every morning and every night before he goes to bed, I kiss him the same way that I kiss my daughter. I tell my daughter to be independent the same way I tell my son. I gave them the same lessons. The difference is that the expectations on them when they get out of my world and get into society are completely different. It doesn't matter what I've taught them or how I've raised them. There are a different set of expectations on my son than there will be on my daughter. And that I recognize. Now the issue is this. Because we have to recognize that there are a different set of expectations. We got to figure out what those expectations are. And then you got to figure out, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to teach our boys and our sons that they have to meet whatever those external expectations are, or they're going to be looked at as less than? You understand what I'm saying? So, like, the issue is, you know, it's just in layman's terms, nobody wants their sons to be weak, whatever that is, because we know and understand what happens. We know and understand what happens to men that society perceives as not being an alpha. But in order to make you an alpha, I got to put you through some stuff.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. You know, you got to, you said you got to create this, and then you're like, oh, I created a monster if it gets out of control. But I think the other thing is, I mean, your example is like, I'm sure there are some parents that are doing that. But my notion that is not happening stems from a basic concept of gender reveals and the happiness that comes when it's one or the other. And that tells me that generally there's probably still going to be differential treatment based on, you know, what that gender is. And if it's not happening in the house, as you said, it's happening outside of the house, and then any responsible parent is going to want to train their child to be able to do the things that are more likely to affect them as one gender as opposed to the other. Like if we were talking about, you know, happening to be female, there are going to be certain conversations that are going to be happening that ain't going to be happening with males.
Yeah.
Because they just are necessary. And on top of that, if that preparation doesn't happen, like if you're going to send your child to a place, a job, and this job requires uniforms, and you haven't trained them on, you know, what it would be like to have to wear uniforms or whatever that structure is, you're not going to be ready. And then you're going to feel like you didn't do your job as a parent. So as much as we would like to say, oh, I don't have to worry about what society does, that's very difficult, depending on where they are. And then add in other factors besides just the fact that they're male, happen to be a male of color, or all these other things that might go along with it, then you got a lot more to think about. So it gets complicated real fast.
Yeah. I keep the phrase that continues to pop in my head is, I believe that as a society, we want our men to be strong, whatever that is. I believe to some, this is just my opinion, I think to some extent women want their men to be a man, to be a stereotypical man. You just want them to be nice and sweet. You want them to be nice, you want them to be sweet, but you also want to protect her. Your ex-boyfriend or ex-husband walks up and says, yeah, I had her first. You want your husband to smack him, probably.
Or punch him.
You don't want your husband. Your ex disrespects you, and your husband is standing there. You don't want him to say, you know what, honey? He's being aggressive, but we're going to take the high road. You'll go home and you will be upset. You'll be like, who is this I'm in the car with? Now, I'm not advocating fighting or aggression or violence in any way. I'm saying it's easy for us to sit. We have to remember the level of consciousness that's on this call and the way we think about worlds, things. The everyday average person may not think about things that way. Again, and I don't mean it disrespectfully as a superior, inferior thing. I'm just saying it's a different way of thinking about things. And maybe it's interesting to see are the mass majority of people out there, everyday folk, are they okay with how things are? When I see people talk about relationships and marriage, people typically still believe that, you know what I mean? Like it's a man's job to provide and protect. Typically, the everyday average person on the street. Typically, the everyday average person on the street, if a woman is working and a man is not, they'll see something wrong with that. If a male wants to be a stay-at-home dad and she work, no matter how much money she makes and no matter how great of a stay-at-home father he is, typically the everyday average person would see something wrong with that. Now, personally, obviously there shouldn't be anything wrong with that, but just making the point that I wonder if the masses still believe and hold dear to these stereotypical roles and ideas. And the thing is this. This is just to make... Everybody want hot dogs, but they don't want to know how they made. And it's like, in order to make men strong and to make men alphas, come on. You, like, as boys, we go through stuff. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it's what it is. And in the process of trying to mold this boy into a man, do we go overboard sometimes and give him an identity complex? Do we go overboard and remember we said it's a fine line between protection and control. It's a fine line between protection and dominance. So our goal is to make him a provider and a protector, but we feel like we got to be rough on him in order to survive and do that. And some people go overboard, and maybe that's where that toxicity comes in, or how he interprets it. Maybe he interprets it a certain way, and it goes from being a protector to trying to dominate.
I think there's so many variables there, it's hard to tell, because it could be, you know, say this, the child has been scaffolded to be the alpha male or at least aspire to be. Maybe he's actually somewhere in the middle and has to do a lot of his time posing to be an alpha, because really he's not an alpha, he's a beta. He would prefer to be that way, but he has to fit in. He's got to do the alpha thing. And then the right, or I should say, the mismatch of partner might make that even more complicated. Not always. I'm not saying like a man's inability to control their aggression is always about the woman. But there can be some ingredients that's going to flare that up a bit, right? You know, a man feeling emasculated is a real thing that does happen. And there could be things that are done, particularly if there's the thought is with that partner that, which is a reasonable thing. It's a reasonable thing for a woman to say, look, I don't want to be disrespected. I don't want to be, nobody wants to be controlled. I don't want to be thought of as less than. Even when you think about these things and the way these debates happen in the church and the thought that, okay, if it says in the good book, the man is the head of the house, does that necessarily mean that the woman is less than? Going back and forth about, no, it doesn't mean that, but the misinterpretation of it that causes problems. So if you've got somebody who has this belief who just wants to be equal, which is understandable, but the way they go about it is by being hyper aware of anything that looks like control. So you are trying to be in protector and provider role, and the way they go about it sends off red flags for this woman who gets hyper aware of it and causes her control piece to come in, and now he feels emasculated and he's just going to turn up even more. So sometimes I think that's actually part of the cycle. It's like, oh, you're trying to control me. When, okay, some men are trying to control you, but sometimes they're not really trying to control you, and your reverse way is not even, it's not even the woman saying trying to control me, it's they just try to control the man. You know, so like, okay, you're trying to control me, I'm gonna try to control you, and then that just amplifies this, okay, well, I gotta show you I'm the alpha right now then.
Yeah. That's a good point. To take this a step back is, I can hear people now, and I know I will hear this. You said that men can be emasculated. Mm-hmm. Should that see, this generation is saying, should that even be a thing? If you worried, if you can be emasculated in the first place, then that's a problem. It shouldn't, those things shouldn't matter to you. Being a man, feeling like a man, whatever that is, feeling like a man, being a man, feeling masculine, those things shouldn't matter to men. I think that is the message that is the message that, those are the conversations that I have with this generation. What do you think?
This would be my thought on that generation. See what you think about it. This is just my thought. My thought would be, if the argument is a man shouldn't feel emasculated, there's lots of things that people shouldn't feel. Your value shouldn't be based on whether somebody at work thinks that you're competent, or rather somebody that you go to school with thinks you get good grades, or rather you have the best car or best house. But that doesn't mean it won't be affected by it. And the reality is, we are just susceptible beings, whether we're male or female. And if we weren't, the advertisement companies wouldn't be making so much money. That's why they got LeBron. Right. You know, so.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. I wonder, I'm looking at the time, man. I want to shift this, and we only got a few minutes left. Gosh, because I really want us to talk about how does masculinity sort of guide and dictate? Because piggybacking, whether people like it or not, feeling like a man and being masculine or feeling like a man is important to men. I don't care who you are. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care what your social status is. At the end of the day, there are certain things, being able to provide, being able to protect, and being able to some extent, to please women. Those are three things that I don't care what your socioeconomic status is, what your job is. Those are things that all make us equal. I think Chris Rock told this joke, you know, you got this uncle that you're all educating. He said, yeah, but can you beat me up though? You got all that fancy education, but when it's all out the window, there's certain things that men just do, provide, protect, and pleasing women. I'm not saying those are the three things that should define us, but I'm saying it's important to think about when we think about men and masculinity across the board. If you can't do one of those three things, people challenge your masculinity, whether you're rich, poor, black, white, Asian, African-American, Caucasian, whatever. Those three things are the three things that define men.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. I definitely think women can relate to it, even the ones that might be saying what you were saying earlier, because even though some guys might feel when they think about how long it takes some women to get ready, like, I think you look fine the way you are. And, you know, some women are getting ready to look that way for other women, but generally for society overall. And it's almost like these masculinity factors for some men. It's like the idea is, well, I do that to make me feel better. And we may say like, well, it's not necessary, but it still affects them. That's the same kind of thing. And going back to these three about those other things that affect us, it's the same way or same reason, I believe, that certain things were created, like ESPN, SportsCenter. SportsCenter is created, or if you ever seen that commercial where it's like somebody talking about sports and they're like talking out of the side of their butt, like they're not really saying anything. It's because men talk about sports. I'm not saying all men do, but it's like you feel, and sports, what does it do? It amplifies the strength and amplifies to be able to compete, to be at the top of your game, and some very masculine perspectives to it. So if you can't talk about it, then you're not fitting in the club.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really good point. It's a really good analogy. You talk about women getting, like men, we totally, I'm telling women right now, makeup is unnecessary. Like, I mean, from a male perspective, we're like, why are you doing all this to your face? Like, you're already beautiful. But it means something to you, so okay. Or it may take, right, like you said, taking women longer to get ready. We totally don't get it and don't understand. We totally don't get it and think it's unnecessary. But it means something to you. And maybe some of these traits that we consider to be masculine, maybe that's what it is. They just mean something to us as men. And we just got to let it go. But again, it's not, I don't think that's the issue. The issue is one person's protection is another person's dominance when it becomes right. dominant.
Right. And I'll even take that example further, right? Because it wouldn't be correct to say that the looks don't matter to, looks are important to guys, but some will place more emphasis on all that stuff that you do and others will not. So just like us, and we might say, a number of us may say, oh, well, it doesn't matter at all. And it would be true, it doesn't matter as much as it matters to you. But for some of us, it might matter, just like this masculinity thing. We say, well, no, you don't got to be strong. I don't care if he's going to protect me. If someone's like walking by, I can protect myself. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
5 minutes. We just scratching the surface, literally. So where do we move from here? The question is, how does all of this, how does masculinity, the next piece, which I guess we'll have to wait, I guess it'll be a part three. The next piece is, how does masculinity affect how we act and behave in the world?
Yeah, I think that'll be the next part, and that'll be interesting to think about how it shows up in behaviors.
Because being...
And what can be done about it?
Being seen and as perceived as a man is so important to men. Like, I don't think that as men we understand how important it is to us, so much so that it guides everything that we do. And I think women have no idea how important masculinity is to us. And again, a part of that is because we don't have we talked about this before, we don't have a marker that identifies us as men. You know, women start to menstruate, you know that you are going into womanhood. We just kind of sort of got to figure it out. We just know that men, as a man, men do certain things, and if I have to do these certain things to feel like a man. This is something that I talk about in my race class all the time, real quick. I try to briefly say this. It's interesting. We talk about, we always have this conversation about acting black and acting white. And somebody made a joke once. They said, sometimes when people are, when quote unquote, and this is so out of context of the conversation, but you'll understand. When somebody white is trying to act black, it seems overboard. It seems like an exaggeration, and it seems overboard. It seems fake. And I said, and they said vice versa. When someone black is trying to act white, it seems like a caricature or an exaggeration. And we have this whole conversation about, can anybody be a part of any culture and what constitutes cultural membership and all this kind of stuff. I said, but the thing is this. When you're not a part of a culture and you want to be a part of a culture, all you have are the superficial elements. So as to feel or seem genuine, you take those elements that you have and you amplify them because you want to feel and seem genuine. Does that make sense? And you amplify them so much so that it seems fake and like a caricature. And I wonder, now taking this back to our conversation, I wonder if that's what happens with men and masculinity. I am a young man. I am a young boy. I am a young adolescent. I'm a young man and I want to be perceived as a man. And I know that men do certain things, and I want people to look at me and speak to me and treat me with respect and to treat me like an alpha male. So I take these things that I know men do and I amplify them and I exaggerate them. And I think that sometimes that happens. I think men do that. And again, this goes back to men who are insecure. men who have identity issues. You amplify those things and it becomes, you can amplify them so much so to a point that they become toxic.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And also I think just thinking about, but saying like when men that are insecure, I guess the issue I have around that is I don't think that our sense of self or self-esteem is holistic. I think we live in the illusion that it is. I think in reality, we have various forms of who we are, various forms of our identity, and we all we have confidence in those different parts. So you might feel like, you know, I'm 100% confident of myself as a scholar, but you might not be 100% confident of yourself as, I don't know, an athlete, this or that, all those little buckets. So that makes things, I think, a little bit more complicated. And I think the other thing, going to what you say about amplifying things, you know, when you think about words that people like to throw around, like narcissism or narcissistic personality disorder in general, there's this theory that, you know, what you see with that person is somebody who's hyper confident, someone who really only cares about themselves, doesn't care about other people around. Someone who's got a very inflated ego or sense of self. And it's inflated. One theory is that that is inflated because they didn't have the proper support when they were a child to formulate what would be like a normal sense of self. And so they just, like a child might, tried to create a sense of self on their own. And you know how when kids are, you think about a kid in their mind, it goes, it doesn't have boundaries, so it just, if I have to create this sense of self on my own, it's going to be inflated. And I think when it comes to masculinity and things that can be a problem, not saying that this is always the problem, definitely it's not always the case. I mean, I myself work out, but I think sometimes you can see this evident and say males that hyper work out. If you follow their story, you'll find some indications of ego injury. And that these don't have to be severe, but it could just be like somebody was not there for them, had to fend for themselves when they were younger, or whatever the case may be. And that's why when you see them, you're like, man, dude is like ripped. He's like a really big dude, like, and they seem very confident and all that stuff. But what could be, I'm not saying all the time, like, it's always the case, because some people just love to work out. But what's on the inside of that is a small little boy who is just trying to project a man and had nobody help him figure out what that was.
Good point. Very good point. We up on an hour. For those that are listening, contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. B, the number 2B, psych, P-S-Y-T-C-H, b2bpsych@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you think about our idea. Again, we want to thank you all for, we come in here, we're not reading notes, we're not writing things down. Like, that's a part of the fun of this, is trying to figure out. This is just an organic, natural, organic conversation, trying to tease apart some of these issues. So if we've offended anybody, as we always say, charge it to our heads and not our hearts. And we're not here to say that, you know, our perspectives are the gold standard or gold rule. These are just theories and ideas that we hope to have a conversation that people can listen to, and you can go out and have these conversations yourself. So let us know what you think. Let us know what you think about what you've heard and how we can build on this conversation and topics and ways and perspectives and angles that you want us to talk about when we talk about part three of this. Because next we have to talk about, how does masculinity affect how we interact in the world? You know, I heard a guy, and we'll probably lead in with this, maybe we can lead in with this. I heard a guy say, you know why men think about what we say to other men? Because there's always the possibility of this low level possibility of violence. Like, men don't pop off. Men don't necessarily, a lot of men aren't too quick to just pop off and just talk crazy to other men, because this dude might hit me in the mouth. Unless I know this is somebody that I think or believe that I can whoop. Like, this notion or idea of how masculinity, and how we know how other men think about masculinity, it affects how we speak to each other. It affects how we treat each other. It affects how we interact and move in the world. You see what I'm saying? So it'll be interesting. You know, next week we can tease apart some of those ideas, some of those concepts, and see what we come up with. But again, we got to get out of here. As I always say, you know, life is You know, graveyards are full of death and potential. Make sure that you are doing something that sets your soul on fire, and make sure the people that you love in this life, make sure you know, make sure that they know that you love them. Love hard, play hard, work hard, and do something that sets your soul on fire and that makes you happy. And as we always say, you know, be good to each other, be kind to each other, and have these conversations. The only way that anything can get better, we can fix anything, is if we talk. And sometimes that means you got to talk about uncomfortable concepts and uncomfortable ideas, but hopefully something fruitful will come at the end. And as always, Dr. Chapman will take us out. Peace and blessings, everybody.
Yes, I want to start out with, you know, this Sunday is Mother's Day. So happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, to my own mother, to my sister, to, you know, all the mothers out there. You are the birth makers, bringers of life. When you birth a child, though, there's also a male that's part of that process. And I think we've been having these conversations about how a male defines themselves, and how they get comfortable with that. So maybe one thing you could take away from it is thinking about the conversations you want to have with the men in your life. Go ahead, celebrate Mother's Day. But then when that's over, you know, maybe start thinking about the other men in your life and how they're feeling and how they're processing the world. I saw a meme or something like that. I guess it would be called a meme on Facebook that said something along the lines of, I was always strong because I was never allowed to be weak. And I think that resonates with a lot of women. I mean, a lot of men, a lot of people, but men in general. But I think the other part about that is the words of strong and weak. Like, to be vulnerable, does that mean that you're weak? Are we allowing space for men to be vulnerable? And can we do that without considering it a weakness? Because if we live in a world or a perspective where we always have to have our shields up, or we always have to show strength, that means whenever we're in a place of vulnerability and we can't show the vulnerability, that actually becomes a weapon. It could become like a cancer from the inside that's going to break you down. And you won't see it until it's too late and you slowly break down from the inside to the outside. So take some time, enjoy Mother's Day. After that, think about your strong men and ask yourself, are you providing opportunities for them to be vulnerable and supporting strength, because there is strength in vulnerability. Peace and blessings. We'll talk to you next time. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe.
This is the student broadcast voice of Marshall University, WMUL-FM, Huntington, West Virginia, USA.